this week on The Inswinger.
They are set up even more in Ten Hag's image.
They have a good team.
Yeah, it's on paper. The team is there. So that's where I kind of lose support for Ten Hag.
Just sloppy, complacent, and a lack of focus, really.
I'm not really sold on Ipswich. Calvin Phillips running that midfield. He's running as fast as my gran.
With this inconsistency with the team and managerially, then I just don't see him lasting.
Welcome back to The Inswinger, Season 4, Episode 5. I'm Charlie DiMatteo, joined alongside
Harrison McGlashan.
Not a ton of talking points this weekend in the Premier League, but there were some interesting games, a couple of high-scoring games. Spurs went and were a bit Spursy at the weekend at the Amex. Brentford and Brighton went at it in an 8-goal. I'm not going to call it a thriller because Brentford were comfortable. We'll get to that. Erik ten Hag, is he a dead man walking? We're going to discuss some of the selections he made to his starting lineup and the players he omitted from that starting lineup. We're going to get into the relegation battle and maybe even touch on some interesting news regarding Man City and their constant ongoing legal battles, Harrison. But I want to start at the Amex. Brighton have a bit of a weird one this season. Hertzler came in. It was positive from the start. They've been a bit here or there, but they sit sixth in the table. They had a huge comeback win. They were down 2-0 to Spurs, and Spurs and Ange Ball were in full force. They looked great. But credit to Brighton, the ghost of Danny Welbeck still popping up with goals. Jorginho Arruda, who they brought in for big money, scoring goals. What did you make of Brighton's comeback win?
Tell you what, man, they're a good team. They're fun to watch. They're a deeper team than we're used to seeing. They've spent a lot of money this summer, and it seems to be paying off. Although you touched on their form beforehand, and they hadn't really won a game at home in the league since that win over Man United. So they were sort of due a performance. And I thought they were fantastic in the second half. I think we'll touch on Spurs and how they maybe let them back into it a little too easily, for my liking at least. But yeah, I mean, Brighton, they're just one of these teams that you expect to be good at this point because they've been consistently solid for so long. And they've just got exciting attacking players. I want to touch on Matoma, who had a difficult year last year, looks back to his best, fit, sharp. I mean, some of the balls he plays into the box, outside of the boot, it's sensational stuff. Rüter, you mentioned, looks great. I mean, we haven't even talked about João Pedro or Evan Ferguson, who didn't even play. Hinchelwood playing in midfield. This Kadioglu guy, like, you know, they're just plucking players out. And Baliba in his second season looks a lot better. So just I just love the vision of this club and the recruitment they've done, where they're going. Minta as well. I wanted him at Everton. We were linked with him in the summer. He looks great. Got his goal. And Danny Welbeck. I mean, this guy just keeps on doing it. Talk about a guy who silences the haters, as the cliche goes. Nobody wants to give Danny Welbeck his props, but man, he deserves it. I mean, it's too bad England have some strikers coming through at a younger age because he deserves a call-up, probably. I mean, the goals, I feel like every time I watch Brighton, Danny Welbeck pops up and scores. Mm-hmm. He's just one of those guys. So yeah, they were great. The new manager's ideas seem to be translating very well. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that halftime team talk and see what he said and what changed. But I think also it was an equally poor collapse from Spurs, really, who should be seeing that game out. And Ange, what you could see, very frustrated and just deflated, disappointed at full time. You could tell he was just like, oh, I thought we were past this. We're clearly not. And that's just the Spursiness in Tottenham, who were brilliant in the first half. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were all over Brighton. They looked like they could score every time they came forward. Madison, Kulusevski, Bentancur continuing to impress. Solanke and Johnson. Johnson gets his goal again, is in a really good form. And then it was just the complete opposite in the second half. They were just too easy for Brighton at times. And yeah, I mean, just sloppy, complacent. And a lack of focus, really, I think is what it comes down to for Spurs, who, yeah, I mean, I would have the same reaction if I were Ange. Just you think you're over that hump and then you're not. I mean, that's just poor.
Yeah, I second everything you said on Brighton. And I've got a question that I don't really know the answer to. And I saw it on Twitter. It was, You know, these pictures of Ange just looking depleted after games they've blown. And the caption was, like, here's the look of a man who knows he can't outcoach the identity of a club. Do you really think there's truth in that? In that, you know, Spurs have this Spursyism where they bottle leads and they bottle titles? Or is it just kind of, to be a really good team in the Premier League, you have to be able to close out games where you're leading on the road against good teams like Brighton? You know, is there truth in either side of that?
I mean, you could make a very good argument either way. I mean, it's getting harder and harder to argue that the culture can be changed at Spurs. I'm of the opinion that I really like Ange. I just like his vibe, the way he speaks. I think he really wants to change this club. Yeah. And I think if there's anyone who can do it sort of personality-wise, he seems to be the guy. Clearly not there yet. But I'm of the opinion that, yeah, these things can change. I mean, there's been a pretty big overhaul at Spurs. When you look at from, like, the Pochettino days, the Mourinho days, like, the Dele Allies and the Harry Kanes are no longer there. It's really just Son from, like, the previous era.
So this identity thing doesn't really add up because they're not there. They haven't been there.
I'm at a loss because I look at the team on paper, and other than maybe Werner, who's probably a sub, I'm like, yeah, that's a good team. That's probably your first team bar Son. That should be good. I like all the players there. But the mentality in the dressing room is one of those intangibles that I just don't know how you solve that. I think it just has to be a matter of time before, I don't know whether it's something just clicks or it's a slow burn and maybe they just have to get over the line in a tough situation, whether that's a top four or an FA Cup or something, to give them the belief that they can do it. Is it a lack of confidence? I don't know. But it is plagued Spurs for years. It still is.
Yeah, I think an interesting case study in regards to this is Arsenal and Arteta. And you look at where they came from. Now, granted, Arsenal had success as a club, lots of success. Maybe Spurs hasn't had that. But if you look at where Arsenal came from when Arteta took over and where they are now, there's been an identity shift and a belief shift. And the thing I think separates the two is that Mikel Arteta won an FA Cup in his first season. And, you know, it was COVID, no fans in attendance. I know, but I just think, like you said, the silverware aspect and the, hey, we've done this, we've been there, done that, gets the buy-in from the players and just changes the mentality that, like you said, Spurs haven't gotten to. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Ange goes about getting that buy-in mentally from these guys, because it's clear they can do it on the pitch. That's what's, I think, so frustrating for Spurs fans. But how you get over that mental hump, I think, is and I don't want to make this about Arsenal, but, like, that jump they've made has been so impressive to get up to Man City level. And you could say, well, they haven't done that because they haven't won the title, but they have. Like, they're up there with them. Spurs aren't even in the same realm as them and have not been for quite a long time. So it's a really interesting thing to watch because week in and week out, we see what Spurs can do on the field with these players tactically. They can blow teams away. And then you see a collapse like that away at Brighton, who, yes, they have good players, but I think Spurs on paper are better than Brighton. And up 2-0, you gotta close that game out. And I think Ange will be furious and fuming with that. So really interesting stuff at the Amex. And for Spurs overall, what a peculiar club they are. Moving on, I just want to talk briefly about United and Erik ten Hag. Obviously, they're struggling this year. They sit 14th in the table. You know, all sorts of rumors coming out about ten Hag sacking. And then he decides to start Johnny Evans, Harry Maguire. I don't think Ugarte started. That was the big thing.
It was Eriksen and Mainoo.
Eriksen and Mainoo in midfield against Villa. Now, they got a point against a very good Villa team away from home. So you think, you know what? Not a bad point. But my question is, you know, what does him starting those players say? Because on the bench, you have, let's see, close to £100 million worth of center backs in De Ligt and Lisandro Martinez. You've got £50 million in Ugarte. Why did he decide to start these players? Is this a side to the Bourne room of something? I don't know what it would be. It's not like an FU, you didn't buy me my players, because they literally did.
It's a dangerous game.
I was like, is he just punting? He knows he's getting it sacked. Like, what is going on here? What did you make of that?
I found it strange. I don't think anyone really believes the rotation argument. Villa are a good side. It's a dangerous game to play. If they lose that game, and he plays Evans and Maguire, he's getting even more pelters probably for not playing his guys who. I think De Ligt has done all right. I don't think he's set the world alight, but I think he's been fine. Maybe he'll grow into it a little more. Lissandro, we know, is quality. I am a fan. Ugarte on the bench, your big new guy. I think, Eriksen and Manu is lightweight in midfield. Listen, it's a good point, but it also shows how far United have fallen, saying, Villa were kind of there for the tanking after a big Champions League week for them. I don't know. You're United. Like, isn't this a game you want to win? Sort of a tired Aston Villa team. I don't know. I mean, I found it very strange. I agree with you that I don't think it's a game you want to play with the board. I find it hard to believe that that's what he was doing. Maybe he just really believed that his center backs were too tired. And Evans, I don't know. Evans and Maguire just don't scream fresh to me. You know, even if they didn't play midweek or whatever. I just don't really get that. I mean, Maguire came off injured anyway, so we saw a bit of De Ligt. But yeah, I don't know, man. I think he's a dead man walking. I don't see. I mean, let's compare, right? Unai Emery comes into Villa, changes things immediately, builds and builds and builds. Now they're in the Champions League. Ange comes into Spurs. You see the football almost immediately. They're making mistakes, but the football's there. Ten Hag, I don't see the style, the football, the identity. We've talked about all these sort of buzzwords, but what's he trying to do now? I don't really get it. I feel like I could just go down the list of like Premier League managers. I mean, Iraola at Bournemouth took him like 10 games, but then it's like, we know what they're doing. We know who they are. We know where they're going on the up, right? Like you could go down the league. Ten Hag, I just think he's playing a very dangerous game in not really committing to a team, to a style. I just don't, at this point in time, I don't see him lasting this season unless he changes something or these, I don't know, like bravery is maybe the word, right? Because they're not scoring goals, right? And when you look at the front three, Rashford has done it in the Premier League. Yes, he's struggled. Garnacho, everybody likes. I think he's really a talent. Bruno Fernandes is awesome, can score goals. Hoyland and Xerxes, well, he spent a lot of money on them. Yeah. You know, you expect them to be decent. I think both of them, there are players in there. I'm sorry, it's on the manager to get these guys firing. Even if, the Palace game, at least they created some chances. They didn't score. But, I mean, it's just a bit flat sometimes in attack. Like, I'm not seeing enough tactically. Where it's at least like, okay, we're close, we're nearly there. We just can't quite put it in. Like, it's not that they're not creating enough. So things like that where last season, and I think this problem has somewhat continued this season, they were too easy to play through. He's not solving the issues at hand, right? So when you're not solving the issues, when you're not instilling a clear philosophy, when you're not, when you haven't really decided on your best team and which side to play Garnacho on and all these things like that, and rotating the center backs sort of out of the blue, not playing Ugarte, playing with Eriksen and Manu as a midfield too, like, there's no consistency. That's the word I keep using with this team. And it's just, if it's a trend that's going to continue with this inconsistency with the team and managerially, then I just don't see him lasting. Like, I'm sorry. I'm sure he did great things at Ajax, but like, we're just not seeing that. Like, where is that? It's season three.
Yeah.
Where is that? That's why they hired you.
Yeah, I think, again, looking at other managers, you brought up a couple great examples of managers who immediately you've seen identity, and even with Iraola, you saw at first a dip and then a rapid increase. And I'll talk about Arteta again. And you brought up a good point about the players there. And with Arteta, there was a decline. He came in halfway through the season, finished eighth. And he had a whole season, finished eighth again. But then, that next year, it took him about like three games. Then they almost finished in the Champions League and were really good. It was a massive progression. And you saw the players they were bringing in time and time again. In those first couple seasons, you were like, this team is all over the place. You got players from Wenger here. You got Emery here. And, like, that is where United were, like, the last 2 years. Now, if anything, they are set up even more in Ten Hag's image.
They have a good team.
Yeah, it's on paper. The team is there. So that's where I kind of lose support for Ten Hag. You know, when people want to bring up other comparisons to other managers, it's like, dude, we've actually seen you at times play a style of football with weaker players that's gotten results. Good job for you. That first year you finished third and got a trophy. Impressive. Last year it was a car crash, whether it was injuries or lack of consistency, whatever. This year you come in, you get more players, you have no excuses, you have no major injuries. Your team is ready, and we're not getting anything. So maybe Ineos are saying, you know what, we got him these players. We're going to give him the time. How much time does he have? I think Christmas is the benchmark. Yeah. I think you'll start to see after 14, 15 games, be close to that halfway mark, you'll see, and they'll make a decision. But for me also, it's the man management side. You know, even when Arsenal were struggling under Arteta, I watched the Amazon documentary series. It kind of seemed like he had a good grasp of the dressing room. Ten Hag never really gives that vibe that he's, you know, he was a player or like knows kind of what, how to connect with players and his management skills. We've seen firsthand. Look at Ronaldo. Look at Sancho. Look at spats he's had with Rashford and things like that. So that's another red flag of why things may not be working out. So maybe they bring someone in. Is it Tuchel? You know, who knows? We've talked about this before.
I mean, if he can't get a hold of the dressing room with his own guys there, De Ligt, Mazraoui, Martinez, Onana, yeah, all of these guys.
And we say his, like, guys, not just because they're the ones he picked. They're all like ex-Ajax. Like, he's coached a couple of them, literally, a good few, many of them. So, like, that's to a greater extent. Not many coaches in the world are afforded that luxury to bring in top quality players that they've worked with before. You bring up a good point there. These are his guys, and they're not performing. So maybe fault has to go on them, too. All right, let's move on to what was the highest scoring game of the weekend, might be of the season thus far. 5-3, Brentford scored inside the first 90 seconds again. Went 1-0 up. I think Wolves made it 1-1, then it was 2-1 and 2-2. Brentford ended up pulling away to make it 5-2, and then Wolves nicked a consolation goal, rather, to make it 5-3. How impressed have you been with Brentford? I know before the season you were kind of maybe not so high on them, but they're up there getting results comfortably in the table, and we'll get to Wolves and the shambles they are right now.
Yeah, sorry, Brentford. I mean, 11th comfortable mid-table. The Ivan Toney loss hasn't really fazed them. I thought they would be screaming out for a striker without him and without Thiago, who they signed, who has a long-term injury. But got to tell you, I think we have to talk about the excellence of Thomas Frank. Because last year, you know, there was a bit of a crack, and you thought they sort of just slipped away. I mean, I think they were always above the relegation zone, but they weren't far off. And I just thought, ooh, maybe next season, have they done enough? I don't think so. They could be in trouble. And he's turned it around. They look solid. They look more like the Brentford of old, you know, sort of two, three seasons ago, as opposed to last season. But the star man has been Mbeumo, who has really risen to the challenge of being the talisman in this team. He's a great finisher, man. He's excellent. He's versatile. He can sort of play. I'm always sort of weary of those players who, like, you don't really know their position. But I have to say, Brian Mbeumo is just an excellent Premier League forward who seems like one of those guys who probably won't get the big move, but kind of deserves it. But you know what? Fair enough. Maybe this is, I don't want to say this is his level, but like being a talisman of a mid-table team, maybe that's the role he excels in.
And that's a really hard thing to do because I think, you know, some of his best attributes are instincts in and around the 18-yard box and quality of finishing. And we see it with guys at big clubs who squander chances and they get the big chances and they score a lot of goals, but it's only because they get so many chances. A guy like Mbeumo does not. He gets a couple a game, and he really has to take them. That's why I think he's so impressive. I think it's a great point. Yeah. And Wolves are all over the shop. We've spoken about the players they lost in the summer. I don't really see an identity forming. I think when you take Kilman, who was their captain, out of the dressing room, Pedro Neto, who had been a stalwart for them since they've been in the Premier League, it seems like they've got the air sucked out of them. They haven't been able to invest in the market to recoup, you know, some of the talent that they lost. And they got money for these players, but they didn't really invest into guys that we know can do it. And I'm not totally lost on Wolves because I see glimpses. I think their performance against Liverpool was somewhat positive. Even in this game, they went down twice and came back twice. They just got outplayed in the end, so there are question marks over the defense. But so I'm not sold on the players necessarily. Like I think they have the players that can do it. Whether Gary O'Neill will be the manager to keep them up if they do stay up, I don't know. That is a whole different question that we could get into. But yeah, I mean, do you have any?
It's not a good defense. No. I think that's where the problem. I mean, your boy Dawson and Tati Gomez are really not pulling up many trees. I think you hit the nail on the head there with Kilman. Big loss. Didn't really replace him. I'm more bullish on the attacking side of things for Wolves. I think they can score a few goals. I've mentioned Strand Larsen before. He looks to be a handful. And Cunha, I think, is quality. The midfield seems to be decent. It's the defense. And the fullbacks fly forward, too. Semedo and Aiden Ori are more attacking-minded. And you're leaving Gomez and Dawson a bit exposed back there. And they just don't have the pace or aggression or whatever to just deal with. They didn't have the pace or aggression to deal with what Brentford were throwing at them at the weekend. So big problems. It's on O'Neill to sort it out at the back, because obviously I don't think he's going to get many solutions in terms of, you know, incomings in the short term. So he's going to have to make them harder to beat first and foremost.
All right. I want to wrap things up today with a bit of interesting – or no, sorry. Let's talk about the relegation battle. Before we get into Man City.
Segway, yeah.
Yeah, so we have these teams struggling down at the bottom. If you had to pick three right now, so you've got Wolves or rock bottom. Southampton just above them on goal difference, but they both only got 1 point. Palace down there in 18th. And then you've got Ipswich, Everton, and Leicester. Those seem like the six teams right now. You know, Forest are going well right now, but even them maybe could drop down later in the season. You never know. If you had three right now, who do you say most likely to go down?
I think Southampton, definitely. I think I had them bottom in my predictions. I'll stick with that. I think Palace will be okay. I think they can get out of it. I think they've just got enough. I think he just needs to find a bit of a better answer in the attacking department. I'm not sure Nketiah and Mateta work in a front three. So does he go to a two? I don't know. But I think there's some tinkering to be done there to really get the Palace attack clicking. So I think they'll come out of it. You know what? I have to say, I'm not too sure about Wolves. I just think with that goal difference,
I think it's between them and Leicester.
They're leaking goals. I'll say Wolves may be down. And yeah, I would see Ipswich. I was hot on, and they got pumped by you boys.
I was going to talk about that next. I think the three teams I think Southampton are done.
Yeah, don't see it.
I think I was not this way prior to this weekend, but after seeing Julian Lopetegui's startlingly mid West Ham dismantle Ipswich at home, I'm not really sold on Ipswich. I'm going to be honest. Calvin Phillips running that midfield. He's running as fast as my gran. He got turned again by Bowen for a goal. I just think West Ham have quality players in attack, and it was individual moments that undid Ipswich, and I was expecting to see more of a defensive structure and unit. Going forward, I'm really impressed with Liam Delap, the Man City Youth Academy product. Scored another very nice goal. Maybe Areola could have done better. I'm just not sold on them. I was expecting a bit more structurally from Ipswich, because as we saw with Luton last year, it's not going to be the individuals that keep them up like we see with some teams like Forest in past year, or even Wolves, where you've got individual talent that can keep you up. It's really the structure defensively and working as a unit, and I didn't really see that from Ipswich. So I think them and Southampton are down. That third spot, I don't want to be boring and say Leicester and just say all three that came up are going to go back down. I think it's between Leicester and Wolves. I think Everton will make their way out of it after a shaky start. I think they'll get some momentum under their belt, which they're desperate for. I think Wolves are in a really similar position to Leicester when Leicester went down. Maybe I think that Leicester team was was better than this Wolves team, which doesn't bode well for Wolves. Managerially, I don't think there's a lot between the Leicester manager, Steve Cooper.
Steve Cooper, yeah.
And Gary O'Neill. I like Cooper. I like his track record. And I've liked what I've seen in glimpses thus far from Leicester. They did pick up a win over Bournemouth, who are a decent side. That's a big win. Can they get some more of the results at home? The King Power can be a tough place to go when they're on form. So I think I'm gonna predict.
You're gonna back Leicester?
I'm gonna back Leicester. Yeah. Always good to have them in the league after what happened in 2015-16. They're going through some financial issues. There's something to keep an eye on. Unfortunately, in recent years, you know, these teams that are around the bottom three have to keep an eye on, you know, PSR and all that stuff. So don't be surprised if Leicester come into the news for that. So we'll see if Wolves can make their way out of it. It's got to start soon, though, or else Gary O'Neill's going to be out of a job.
Yeah, right now I would have them favored probably for the drop. So I would have Southampton, Wolves, and then probably between Ipswich and Leicester. And before the weekend, I would have probably leaned towards Ipswich just because, okay, they haven't won, but they've been tougher to beat. You know, 0-0 at Brighton, 1-1 Fulham, 1-1 Southampton, not a great result. 2-2 at Villa. Okay, they can compete. They're not getting blown away. Then they go to the London Stadium and get blown away. So I'm trying not to be reactionary. But I have to say, I think maybe the difference, and maybe this is just me being contrarian, but maybe the difference between Ipswich and a Leicester will be up front. Maybe Liam Delap has the physicality, the finishing ability to get them enough goals to stay up. And maybe it's just a year or two too many for Jamie Vardy to sort of do the impossible. But on the other hand, Leicester have, you know, Mavididi. They got a few guys, Buonanotte, who I like, who could chip in. But I'll back Ipswich. I'll back the Tractor Boys, just because I like what they've seen from them.
Ed Sheeran,
early
Tractor
season.
Boys.
This is a one-off result, yeah. Okay? Everton are going to go to Portman Road and smack them. But from then on, they're going to pick up some form against Brentford and whoever else they've got.
Okay, to wrap things up, we had a bit of news this past week about Man City. They were at court with the Premier League, not over there pending hundreds of charges. It was, I think, a commercial deal. And having to do with inflation of commercial rights and sponsorship money. And the league, for the Premier League, claimed victory in a case I'm going to read from this article from The Guardian, relating to rules over associated party transactions. And the league put out a statement saying basically, you know, we won. And Man City disputed that. So even after...
Both sides think they won.
Even after the Premier League went to court with Man City, and apparently they won on some charges, City's email to the Premier League claimed they repeat several, quote-unquote, several inaccuracies. The summary is misleading, and that's what Man City have to say. And interestingly enough, at this court trial hearing, whatever, among the teams in support of Man City were Everton, Chelsea, and Newcastle. Interesting three.
Yeah, really.
And there
interesting.
Were eight teams, including United, Arsenal, Liverpool, West Ham, and others, who were witnesses for the Premier League. So we don't know a whole lot about the ins and outs of this case, but what does it tell you that those teams were in support of Man City and the others weren't?
Well,
given the
just
spending
the
patterns,
eye test, yeah. Chelsea multi-club, City multi-club, Newcastle multi-club in terms of Saudi, and Everton potentially with the new incoming owners and the Friedkins would be multi-club. So that is a very interesting trend. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. If I'm the Premier League, who apparently are winning, it doesn't seem like they're winning it much these days, the Premier League. I got to be honest. I would be concerned if I were them and if I was Richard Masters. I just think if they lose the 1-1-5 sort of cases, I think Masters is probably done. I don't know. I don't want to make too much of it because it's not those 150 charges. But it's just a bit murky in terms of Man City saying, well, the Premier League was found to have abused its dominant position. And then the Premier League saying, oh, no, we're good. They were unsuccessful, blah, blah, blah. It's just, all a bit dodgy.
It is a bit dodgy. And the one other thing, I think, between the clubs that were in support of Man City is they all hate the Premier League. If you go back to Chelsea, the Premier League essentially forced Roman Abramovich. Now, it's not the same Chelsea. They basically forced Abramovich to sell the club, or maybe that was the FA in England. because of what was going on.
He was forced out.
He was forced out. And we know they're breathing down their neck on PSR, and Chelsea are constantly looking for loopholes out of financial fair play.
Selling hotels to themselves.
Everton, we don't need to get into why they hate the Premier League.
Yeah.
Newcastle, same thing. Especially these owners, because the Premier League basically spent a year and a half trying to stop the PIF from coming into the Premier League and spending their money. And now that they're here, they're still not really able to splash the cash like I think we all thought they were going to. So not a surprise that those three teams were in support of Man City when it came to this specific ruling. Again, like you said, though, when we get to the 115 charges, if that ever happens, it's begun, I think. What I heard was we're going to start hearing stuff around the new year based on the timeline of when the courts are scheduled. So that'll be interesting to see. That's going to be a whole other talking point when we get there. Obviously,
It's just going to be massive.
It is. And I have a hunch of how it's going to go, but I don't want to speculate. Interesting to see. Premier League Civil War. Are we on the...
Yeah,
the
no, I mean, you're right. It does this foreshadow the future where we're going to have these cases which certain clubs are going to lean one way and certain are going to lean the other. I don't love that as a future for this league, a sort of divide amongst the clubs. But we'll see. We could have this football governance bill coming in and the Premier League
and
may
Gary
no
Neville's
longer...
been a big proponent.
Yeah,
of
I
that.
Mean, they might not be able to regulate themselves anymore. So it could all change. And there's new PSR changes coming in, right? Yeah. Maybe 2025, I want to say. So how about we get semi-automated offsides in first?
Yeah.
When's that coming in?
Yeah. Well, and it's a shambles. They had a vote on VAR this summer, and just barely it was kept, which I thought was interesting. And we could one day talk about the teams that climb that. I think Wolves were one of them, and then they got screwed over and were happy. But that's another discussion. Enough about boring administration stuff. That's going to do it for this week. Don't think we'll be with you next week. International break, but we look forward to returning after that. And until next time, thank you for listening.